Military leaders say sequestration already damaged readiness during its first year. The Army stopped troop rotations through its combat training centers. The Air Force grounded entire air wings, and the Navy held back the deployment of an entire carrier strike group so that it could hold trained forces in reserve. But Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel says even though DOD desperately wants sequestration to be lifted, the military services need to start thinking about how to do the best they can with limited training and maintenance funds they'll have available during the budget caps.
The strategic choices and management review show that the persistence of sequester level cuts could lead to a readiness crisis. And unless something changes, we have to think urgently and creatively about how to avoid that outcome, because we are consuming our future readiness now. We may have to accept the reality that not every unit will be at maximum readiness, and some kind of a tiered readiness system is perhaps inevitable. This carries the risk that the President of the United States would have fewer options to fulfill our national security objectives.
Hagel spoke at the annual Global Security Forum at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, where he outlined six priorities for matching DOD's missions with a constrained budget. Preparing for a prolonged military readiness challenge is among them. Until recently, military leaders have winced at the term tiered readiness, but many say it's now becoming a reality. For instance, in the Army, out of 45 brigades, only two of the ones that are not currently deployed to Afghanistan are fully trained and ready to respond to a major contingency. So between now and next June, the Army's planning to funnel virtually all of its training funds into seven brigades. In a late October interview with Federal News Radio, General Ray Odierno, the Army Chief of Staff, said at least those brigades will be at acceptable readiness levels.
The problem with that is, so they'll be... If we're able to do that, we'll get them trained and ready. Because my biggest fear is we have to ask to send some people somewhere and they're not properly prepared. But what that means is the rest of the force is going to be training at very, very low levels because there's just not going to be much money for them. And that's a problem for us. But that's we have to do this because we don't know when we might be asked to use the Army. Because of the uncertainty in the world today.
The Air Force is going down a similar path, according to General Mike Hostage, the commander of Air Combat Command. He says some units will be fully trained, others will not. The Air Force and combatant commanders around the world, he says, will have to just accept the fact that some units will not be available to deploy to a contingency until they've had time to train.
To send them forward anything less than fully combat ready would be morally corrupt. Put simply, to deal with sequester, our training focus will be placed on those airmen next on deck to fill our most critical missions, regrettably leaving many others only partially prepared. It is our moral imperative to ensure forces that deploy are fully ready, not partially ready. Sending airmen into combat without the training they need, without the equipment, parts and capabilities they require to be fully effective is unconscionable. Our nation and our airmen deserve better than that.
Apart from managing through an inability to keep forces trained, Hagel says there are five other broad areas where DOD needs to do more to stretch its dollars further in a prolonged sequestration scenario. Atop his list, institutional reform.
Coming out of more than a decade of war and budget growth, there is a clear opportunity and need to reform and reshape our entire defense enterprise, including paring back the world's largest back office. A first step we took this summer was to announce a 20% reduction in headquarters budgets across the department, beginning with the Office of Secretary of Defense. Our goal is not only to direct more of our resources to real military capabilities and readiness, but to make organizations flatter and more responsive to the needs of our men and women in uniform.
Some DOD organizations are trying to beat the 20% reduction Hagel ordered. Army Secretary John McHugh has told all of that service's headquarters elements to shrink themselves by 25%. The Army's also expanded the definition of what constitutes a headquarters. It started with only major commands headed by a four-star general. But Chief of Staff Odierno says the instructions now apply to everything down to two-star commands.
Why are we doing this? Because if we can save 4,500 spaces in those commands, that's one brigade combat team, or it's an aviation brigade, or it's something else that is important to us as we move forward. So we're looking at that. When would we implement it? Probably somewhere beginning in 15 and beyond, but we're still waiting for results. I will tell you that the response we've gotten is very positive from our subordinate commands. They're working this very hard. They understand that we have to become more efficient and effective in our headquarters. You know, I think we're going to get some good savings from this. And for me, it's important that we do that because the Secretary has been very clear about this. And so we are working together to do that.
Among Hagel's other priority focus areas during sequestration, a hard look at the way the military's assumptions about the forces it will need to conduct missions in the future. Also, finding ways to make sure that investments in science and technology programs for the future are not raided to pay for the Pentagon's current operations. And as the military draws down, he says the cutbacks need to be carefully balanced across the broad categories where DoD spends its money.
Across the services, we will need to carefully reconsider the mix between capacity and capability, between active and reserve forces, between forward stationed and home-based forces, and between conventional and unconventional warfighting capabilities. In some cases, we will make a shift. For example, by prioritizing a smaller, modern, and capable military over a larger force with older equipment. We will also favor a globally active an engaged force over a garrison force. We will look to better leverage the reserve component, tempered by the knowledge and experience that part-time units, in ground forces especially, cannot expect to perform at the same levels as full-time units, at least in a conflict's early stages.
Finally, Hagel says, DoD needs to find some way to chip away at cost growth in the area where the department spends about half its money, personnel. He says if it doesn't, the inevitable outcome is that the U.S. military will be poorly trained and poorly equipped, but at least paid pretty well.
Going forward, we will have to make hard choices in this area in order to ensure that our defense enterprise is sustainable for the 21st century. Congress must permit meaningful reforms as they slice the overall budget. We will need Congress as a willing partner in making tough choices to bend the cost curve on personnel while meeting all of our responsibilities to all of our people. Even as we pursue change across the Department of Defense, the greatest responsibility of leadership will always remain the people we represent, our men and women in uniform, their families, and our dedicated civilian workforce.
So far, Congress has rejected almost all of DoD's proposals to reduce personnel spending. It did agree last year to appoint a commission to study the issue of compensation and retirement reform for the uniformed services, and that panel was holding one of its first meetings just as Hagel was speaking. But there's no guarantee lawmakers will pay any attention to whatever proposals they arrive at. Before voting to create the commission, lawmakers first removed a provision that would have required them to take an up or down vote on their recommendations. In Washington, Jared Serbu, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.